All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we are recapping the Falcons' addition of tight end Logan Paulson, as well as the re-signing of defensive end Derek Shelby.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of FalcFans.com, one of the longest-running Falcon fan sites on the internet. Of course, I am on Twitter tweeting up a storm of hot takes at FalcFans, and also the host of this magnanimous Locked On Falcons podcast. So today's episode, we're going to be talking about the signing of Logan Paulson, the impact of that, how it affects the draft, and the Falcons' future at the tight end position, as well as talking about the unexpected, but certainly at least in the Freeman household, welcome re-signing of Derek Shelby, and getting a little bit into the financial implications of that signing, because it's a little weird, but we'll get to that later in the show. Let's jump right into it by talking about Paulson, but first I want to say, I was going to say, I hate to say I told you so, but I don't hate to say it. I love to say it. We talked about this on Monday's episode that this week would probably be a little bit more active than last week. The second wave of free agency is where teams can start to find some bargains. And I think the Falcons, relatively speaking, certainly in the case of Paulson, you can debate it a little bit, maybe in the Shelby, in the case of Derek Shelby. But I think they found some bargains with Paulson, definitely. And we'll see what the Falcons do in the upcoming third wave of free agency, which you would assume will start next week, which typically is when, like, the last signings happen. Saw Vaughn McClure of ESPN tweet out today that the Falcons, there's a chance that the Falcons will re-sign Kamal Ishmael. I think that's a good move on their part, particularly if they can get him at the right price. Hopefully they can get him at a cheaper deal than what they signed him to last year, which was about, like, $2 million. That would certainly be beneficial for their salary cap situation. You know, the couple hundred thousand that they can save, even half a million on that deal, that will certainly benefit them in the immediate future. So we'll see how that goes, and maybe we'll be talking about that potentially on Monday's episode or another time next week. But anyway, let's get into the Paulson signing. Paulson, who is Logan Paulson? He's a solid, reliable, blocking tight end. That's basically what he is. I thought the Falcons would sign him back in 2016, when the Falcons were revamping their offensive personnel to better suit Kyle Shanahan, and Paulson had played many years for Shanahan in Washington and been an effective fill-in starter those times when Jordan Reed and or whoever else was their starting tight end back then. I'm blanking on who was the guy that constantly got hurt before Jordan Reed. Now I have to do the power editing. I have to go look this up because I can't sit here. Was it Fred Davis? Yes, Fred Davis. And back in those days when Fred Davis and Jordan Reed were out, Logan Paulson would step in and be a functional starting tight end, not necessarily a great player in that role, but certainly functional and knows the Shanahan offense. Wound up going to Chicago instead of what I thought in Atlanta, landing in Atlanta. And, after I think he might have got cut by Chicago after last season and wound up in San Francisco with Kyle Shanahan, reunited, and basically was quickly sort of relegated to the third-string tight end behind George Kittle and Garrett Celek, as far as I know, and basically was primarily a blocker. He's a little bit more athletic, a little bit more capable than Toilolo in terms of getting open, but he's not necessarily going to be a guy that's going to be a featured part of the passing attack. Struggled with drops quite a bit last year. All the 49ers tight ends struggled with drops quite a bit last year, but that's a conversation for another day. He signed a one-year, roughly $1 million deal with about $200,000 guaranteed. It's basically that guaranteed portion of his contract makes him a virtual lock to make the roster, similar to what the Falcons gave to Andre Roberts last year, where he signed a one-year, $1.8 million contract, and I think about $300,000 of that was guaranteed, or maybe $700,000, I can't remember the exact. You know, we don't know the exact terms yet, but we can pretty much surmise what it is. With a 7-year veteran like Paulson, there's probably a 900 $15,000 base salary, and with a $90,000 signing bonus would get you the $1.005 million. Because of the minimum salary cap benefit, and I recommend you guys, if you don't know what I'm talking about when I say that, Google it, NFL minimum salary cap benefit, to explain what it is. Instead of counting $1 million against the cap, Paulson should only count about $720,000 against the cap. But because portion of his base salary is guaranteed, that $110K, the difference between that $200,000 and the $90,000 signing bonus, you know, that pretty much makes it so that he's not going to get cut in training camp. And so, you know, it begs the question, what does this mean for the Falcons' tight end position? Well, I think it largely takes tight end off the table for the draft, unless they really, really like a player. I just don't see them taking a flyer on a third string tight end to push Saubert, given some of their other depth holes on the roster, and only 7 picks. Now, you know, if they trade back somehow and wind up with like 10 picks, then, you know, we can open the door to that. But I think unless they really are in love with a player and sort of see that guy as a third, fourth round sort of talent or better, I would be surprised if they take a tight end. And this is where I'm going to get super nerdy again about the roster, as I often do on this podcast. But, you know, we saw in past years, in 2016, the Falcons carry 4 tight ends on the roster with Josh Perkins, Hooper, Toy Lolo, and Jacob Tammy. That made sense given how much the 3 tight end set was utilized under Kyle Shanahan that year. Based off of how I charted games and double checking it with sharpfootballstats.com, roughly the Falcons used 3 tight end sets this past season, about 2.7% of their offensive plays. And you go back to 2016 when the Falcons had these 4 tight ends on the roster and Shanahan was, of course, still calling plays. Throughout that entire season, they ran 3 tight end sets on about 7.6% of their plays, so roughly about 3 times as much. And you remember that number would have been a lot higher probably if Tammy had stayed healthy, because if you look at the first 7 games of the season when Tammy was fully healthy before he got hurt, the Falcons ran 3 tight end sets on 13% of their plays. And this is where, you know, the roster management nerdy stuff that we often talk about in this podcast come into play. But if you're going to run a lot of 3 tight end sets, particularly as much as the Falcons did, it makes perfect sense why you carry 4 tight ends, because if one guy gets hurt, all of a sudden 13% of your offense is scrapped. And that's basically what happened when Tammy got hurt. Perkins wasn't really ready to be deployed in the 3 tight end sets. And so basically for like the next 2 months of the season until maybe about mid-December, the Falcons barely used any 3 tight end sets. Then once Perkins was sort of up to speed, or I guess they were confident enough in his abilities, they started to utilize them a little bit more to sort of balance things out. I think you could also say that that relates somewhat to why the Falcons didn't use a ton of 3 tight end sets this year, because of Saubert's youth. And we saw with Perkins 2 years ago and now with Saubert last year that, you know, rookie tight ends aren't necessarily, unless they have the talent level of an Austin Hooper, a third round talent level or better, that rookie tight ends aren't necessarily going to be expected to come in and carve out a significant role in your offense. And I think that's another reason why the Falcons, quote unquote, settled for Logan Paulson, because they realize that if they're going to get a guy that's going to come in and give what Paulson potentially is going to give, they would have to use one of their day one or day two picks on that guy. You know, maybe you can make a case that maybe the Falcons will utilize more 3 tight end sets because now that Saubert has a year under his belt, he'll be ready to carve out a bigger role, and maybe the Falcons will see an uptick in their 3 tight end sets because Saubert's there and Paulson's now there and Hooper's there. And, you know, adding a 4th tight end makes a lot of sense in that situation, because you need to have that depth if you're going to utilize 3 tight end sets as an integral part of your offense. That's a possibility. I don't think it's likely, but it's a possibility. And you certainly saw plausible reasons why that may be the case, because we did see a little bit more usage of Saubert down the stretch, particularly during that run where Toy Lolo was hurt, even though Sam Brelo you could argue was primarily the number two tight end in a lot of those situations. But I think that Saubert did enough during that, you know, 3 or 4 game stretch run where you could see him carving out a bigger role in the offense. We'll have to see. But let's for example, assume that the Falcons are going to utilize 3 tight end sets for about 7 to 10% of their plays this year. Then I think if that's the case, then I think you can make a case for drafting a tight end, even knowing what Perkins and Saubert were before them. But you're not really expecting that guy to be a major factor, again, unless you really think that guy is a 3rd or 4th round talent that's going to be able to – is good enough to basically come in and earn reps right away. You know, with Hooper, you got to remember Hooper, even though he was a 3rd round pick, opened that 2016 season as the Falcons' 3rd string tight end, and only because of Tammy's injury was he thus thrust into the lineup. And you can argue that because of how high the Falcons drafted Hooper, it sort of forced Shanahan to try to get him on the field as much as possible to make the most out of his talent level so that they didn't basically redshirt a 3rd round pick. You can argue that. Again, it's all this stuff is debatable. Nothing is sort of cut and dry. But I think, you know, with this Paulson signing, I think it does put the Falcons in a situation where they don't need to take a tight end, particularly in the first 4 rounds. Maybe if they want to take a flyer on a guy in round 6 or 7, I'm not going to fault them at that point. But I think if they do that, they're basically planning on redshirting that guy. And I hope that they do a better job of redshirting that guy than they did Brian Hill last year, when they basically did the same thing, when they didn't really need a 4th running back to fill out their roster, but they took a flyer on a young, talented player in the late rounds. And then basically decided, no, I'm not going to let, you know, obviously I still have lingering resentment over that, but I'll let it go. But basically getting back to Paulson, he's basically a 1-year stopgap. I think the Falcons could very well be put in a position where they could use a high pick on a tight end next year. But I think right now the Falcons seem poised to be ready to punt, right? You know, this basically signing, if you want to use this analogy, the Falcons are probably going to punt on this tight end position in this year's draft. I think basically signing Paulson is like running a draw play on 3rd down, on 3rd and long, as opposed to trying to go for the 1st down and putting yourself in a position to punt. And I think there's a real possibility that the Falcons will use a very high pick on a tight end next year. But I think a lot of that depends on how much growth Hooper and Saubert show this year. And I think both those guys, and given the Falcons situation, and we've talked about this in the past, and I'll save this rant for another day, but given where the Falcons are and their need to sort of be, shall we say, frugal or very judicious with how they use their draft picks, because they're not going to have a whole lot of salary cap maneuverability in the coming years, I do think trying to get the most out of every single draft pick that they have and have used is a smart way of doing that. And basically just giving up on Saubert or giving up on Hooper after 1 season, I think, is kind of ridiculous at this point. You got to give both those guys 2 years at the very least to see where they are. And then you can make an informed decision. And I think signing Paulson helps them make that informed decision because they won't feel the need to go into the draft and be like, oh, I guess we got to get Hayden Hurst in round 3 or round 2 or something because we don't have enough tight ends on the roster or something like that. And then you're put in a situation where, you know, not to disparage Hayden Hurst or anything like that, but you draft a tight end and then come to find out that Hooper is a really good starting tight end and you just kind of wasted a pick on a backup tight end, a premium pick on a backup tight end. I don't think the Falcons can really afford to do that moving forward. If you don't know what exactly I'm talking about, I don't want to go into it right now, but go back and listen to Monday's episode where I talked about sort of the future of the team and whatnot. So that's it. And on Paulson, let's move on and talk about Derek Shelby. But of course, I want to let you guys know that you guys should definitely be checking out the Locked On NFL Draft podcast to get insights from hosts John Ledyard and Trevor Sikkema about this upcoming 2018 draft class, as well as the impact of various free agent signings on what teams may do at the top of the draft. Find the Locked On NFL Draft podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. All right, let's talk about Derek Shelby. Now, he signed a 1-year, $3.25 million contract with $2 million guaranteed. I think it was a smart move of the Falcons to bring back Derek Shelby. As regular listeners of this podcast know, I was in very much denial about the possibility of the Falcons cutting Shelby before the offseason. And I sort of was surprised, or sort of definitely was surprised, when they actually did it. I thought they would get him to take a pay cut, and you could argue that they kind of did with this sort of convoluted way of doing it, but it's really more of a 2019 pay cut, because when you factor in the dead cap that they incurred by cutting him initially and the contract they just signed him to, it is the same exact amount that they would have paid him had they not cut him in the first place. So basically, he took a pay cut in 2019 because he signed he had two more years left on his contract through 2019 season originally. They cut him, and now they brought him back on a one-year deal. So that 2019 money is out the door. And so basically what the Falcons did was avoided the possibility of that they would have to cut him after this season and take on dead money in 2019. So they kind of, all this, they didn't save any money for 2018, but they saved money like $1 million for 2019, which, as I just said, you know, isn't a lot, but when you're going to be up against it with the cap for the next couple of years, that $1 million is something. It's not everything, but it's something. But at the end of the day, like, I'm not mad at the Falcons at all, even though they didn't save any money, because, like, as I said many times, Derek Shelby was good last year. So, like, I'm glad that they have a good player. He was arguably our second best run defender on the entire defense, or front seven. Count O'Neill is the G, but you know, it's Grady Jarrett one, Derek Shelby two, when we talk about the front seven. And, like, you know, Derek Shelby gave us positive reps. You know, obviously, I know, knowing Falcon fans and knowing football fans for as long as I have and interacting with them, they only care about how many sacks you have when you play defensive line. And because Derek Shelby only had, what, one sack, he's not good and he's terrible and the Falcons can upgrade and blah, blah, blah. It's whatever. The Falcons needed base defensive players. It seems like they're still going to be poised to have that base defense versus nickel defense rotation. Not ideal, but at this point in time, you know, now we've seen it for 3 years. We're going to see it for a fourth year. I've sort of come to accept it. And the only way that we don't see that is if they continue to draft quality players. Hopefully we'll see a couple of those guys. But I think the Shelby move is similar to the Paulson move in that now it puts the Falcons in a situation where they don't have to feel compelled to reach on a young rookie in this draft to try to fill that base defensive end role. I think really, honestly, outside of maybe using a first-round pick on Taven Bryan, and we've had various discussions, and I'm sure you guys have various opinions on whether you think Taven Bryan will be there when the Falcons pick at 26. But basically, if there's only one guy, that's, you're not in a great position. And basically what I'm saying is, other than Taven Bryan, I don't know if there's anybody in this draft class that I would be like, oh, that guy can come in day one and give you Derek Shelby level production at that base defensive end spot against the run. If we're being honest, you know, there's several guys like in the third, fourth, fifth round range that I kind of like, or at least I'll say I'm intrigued by based off of what little I've seen of those guys. They include guys like James Looney from Cal, John Franklin from Stephen F. Austin, Breland Speaks from Ole Miss, Rasheem Green from USC. Some other guys that I'm like, yeah, if they're there in the fourth or fifth round, I wouldn't, you know, Jalen Holmes from Ohio State, Chad Thomas from Miami. I see them more as day three guys, but yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, I'm intrigued by those guys, but I haven't seen a guy right now so far in this draft class where I'm like, oh man, I want that guy. Like, oh, we need to get that guy. He's the perfect Derek Shelby replacement. Like, it's probably Taven Bryan and that's about it. You know, basically the Falcons are punting. It's fine. We'll talk a little bit more about why they signed Derek Shelby as opposed to some other options like Pernell McPhee in a bit. But I want to give you guys a heads up that if you want to catch all the Locked On podcast content on the FanRag Sports Network, you can now do so by going and checking out LockedOnSports.com, where all the content from all three phases of the Locked On Podcast Network, Major League Baseball, NFL, and NBA, can be found. So if you want to get your one-stop shop for all the great content, by all means, do so at LockedOnSports.com. Okay, so now you're probably like, why did we sign Derek Shelby? Why didn't we sign Pernell McPhee? He's much better. And you're right, he is much better. But to quote, the great orator, you know, what do you guys want to do? Do you want to be ballers, shot callers, or brawlers? Who indeed is dipping in the bins with the spoilers? My friends, it's all about the Benjamins. And that's basically what it boiled down to. Pardon my corniness. McPhee was probably deemed too pricey for the Falcons, I think. I don't think Shelby was. And, you know, I'm not an insider in this, but I've gotten pretty good over the last, you know, decade plus of reading the tea leaves when it comes to the Falcons. That's why, you know, I have a podcast and you don't. No, I'm kidding. But you just sort of look at the last couple of off seasons, these sort of trends and this pattern emerging. Mohamed Sanu comes and visits, signs the same day. Sean Witherspoon comes and visits, signs the same day. Courtney Upshaw comes and visits, signs the very next day. Don Terry Poe comes and visits. He signs within 36 hours. Logan Paul visits, signs the same day. Meanwhile, Justin Bethel comes and visits 4 days later. At least as far as I'm recording this, nothing has happened. Pernell McPhee visits. The very next day, the Falcons sign Derek Shelvin. And the point I'm trying to make is it's about money. You know, basically you can read through the lines, again, speculation on my part, but I think pretty good speculation, that a guy comes to town, he walks in, and if he comes away within a few hours with a new deal from the Falcons, that means there was very little negotiation between the two parties. You know, basically either the guy accepted the Falcons' initial offer or their counter offer was pretty much, you know, pretty small, that it didn't take, you know, significant negotiations to get to, you know, the same, get on the same page. Like, you look at it for Paulson. The Falcons gave him a $90,000 signing bonus, which is basically, again, if you know about the NFL minimum salary cap benefit, again, Google it if you don't know what I'm talking about, which is basically the lowest amount that they could have given him. And, you know, I'm betting that Paulson's counteroffer was like, yeah, fine, I'll take that. But you got to guarantee a portion of my base salary. And his agent in the Falcons probably went back and forth quickly for a little bit and finally settled on that $110,000 for his base salary. I don't know, maybe Paulson's trying to buy a new boat or something like that that costs $110,000. Who knows? But, you know, it didn't take long enough to hammer out that detail. And, you know, he was signed within, you know, how, I don't know, 6 hours of him, you know, showing up at Flowery Branch or whatever it was. You look at Poe. In contrast, that deal took a little longer, 36 hours, because there were incentives and wait clauses in his deal. His contract was a little bit more complicated and probably required a little bit more negotiation and finessing on either party's part. And also, you know, Poe had probably a lot more suitors than a guy like Logan Paulson had. And, you know, his agent probably checked with those teams and whatnot before proceeding with the Falcons, negotiating in earnest. And it probably took about 36 hours in total to hammer out that deal, since it was a little bit more complicated than a one-year veteran minimum contract. You know, it's one of the reasons why Sanu came in. You know, Sanu, why did Sanu sign so quickly? Well, he had a complex deal. It was a five-year deal. But the reason why he signed so quickly, because the Falcons overpaid him, you know, and it's like, oh, this is the best offer I've gotten. I'll take this all day, you know. So that's my theory. You know, as we sit here on Thursday night as I'm recording this, but Friday as you guys are listening to this, Justin Bethel's probably not coming because he probably wanted too much money. He probably wanted to be paid like a quality nickel cornerback, and the Falcons are like, no, you're not a quality nickel cornerback, and we're not going to pay a gunner, you know, $3 million or whatever it is to basically be a gunner. You know, the Falcons talked to McPhee, and he probably wanted more money than the Falcons were willing to pay. Their cap on what they wanted to pay for this role was probably about the $3.25 million that they gave Shelby. Maybe it was $3 million. A one-year $3 million deal was basically what the Falcons gave Adrian Claiborne 3 years ago when they signed him to a one-year prove-it deal when he was an injury risk. I'm sure they probably approached McPhee with a similar contract. And looking around the market, McPhee probably and arguably correctly presumed that he could get more. Aaron Lynch got a one-year $4 million deal from the Bears to be a pass rusher. Peppers got $5 million to re-sign on a one-year deal with Carolina. I'm sure Pernell McPhee was like, I'm better than Aaron Lynch, you know, and I'm younger than Julius Peppers, so I should be able to get at least that much. And given the Falcons' tight salary cap situation, they you know, they probably were like, we can't afford to pay you that much. We can only afford this. And so he walked away. And then when McPhee walked away, again, speculation on my part, but maybe the Falcons had a $3 million deal on the table for Derek Shelby, but they're like, well, since McPhee's not coming, let's up it to $3.25 million. And Shelby was like, good. That was what I was, you know, I'll take that. That's probably better than any offer he was getting on the open market. So, you know, it's all about the money right now. And, you know, this is not like a situation where last year where the Falcons have $20 million in cap space and they're being, for some unknown reason, extremely frugal with a Pro Bowler like Patrick DeMarco because they don't want to pay him $2 million. Like, you know, that's why we're so, or at least I was so upset. I can't speak for the rest of you guys, but if you listen to this podcast, very good chance that you are upset about the Patrick DeMarco deal. Yeah, if I wouldn't know how many, as an aside, side tangent, guys, how many of you guys listen to this podcast like, oh my God, stop talking about Patrick DeMarco. Let it go, Aaron. I'm sure there's a good person. Let me know. Tweet at Falcons. Tweet at Locked On Falcons. Let me know. I'm curious if you want me to cool on the Patrick DeMarco stuff because I don't know. Whatever. You guys know. You listen to this podcast. If you're new to the podcast, just know that there's going to be a lot of Falcon slander when it comes to not re-signing Patrick DeMarco on this podcast. That's, you know, I have to find something to hate the Falcons for, to resent them over, and that's going to be my go-to. Just a couple of bad contracts. But I don't think the Shelby deal is a bad contract. But the point is, $20 million, $2 million, why are you haggling over $2 million when you got $20 million in space? But when you only have like $5 million in space, haggling over $1 million means a lot more. So, to wrap this thing up, I think Shelby's a solid piece, a good player. He'll play one more year with the Falcons. I think tight end and that base defensive end spot still are possibilities in the draft. I think the defensive end spot is more of a possibility because we know that the Falcons certainly could carry another guy on their roster, particularly if they decide to keep Jack Crawford inside a D tackle. If they, you know, they could play Jack Crawford at that as the backup to Shelby in the way that Courtney Upshaw was the backup there. But because, you know, they still need to fill what, at least three spots on their defensive line rotation. They got to replace Poe, they got to replace Claiborne, they got to replace Upshaw, and they got to replace Reuben. Oh, four spots. I'm sorry. So there's a decent chance that one of those spots could be a quote-unquote long-term Shelby replacement, while when you look at the tight end position, they don't really need a fourth tight end. You know, they could use one. No one's going to complain, but you're probably going to sit that guy, so you don't really need that guy, you know. But you can argue that any one of those four holes on the defensive line rotation is going to immediately come in and play. So I don't think the Shelby move precludes the Falcons from drafting another base defensive end, but I certainly think puts them in the position where if they don't find the right guy, then they're not, you know, screwed over like they would be if they didn't have that guy. So solid moves from the Falcons. You know, this is sort of what we were talking about on Monday, is this is the time when you're sort of filling out your roster to position yourselves in a favorable position in the draft. And I think these moves really do that. I won't spend another 20 minutes explaining it to you, but there'll be certainly once we finalize all of these moves and possibly next week, where the things start to truly cool down for the Falcons, typically in that third wave. Certainly by the time we get to April, we can certainly discuss it in detail. But just to give you a hint of what I'm sort of thinking about and what I'm talking about, and it goes back again to what I talked about on Monday with sort of the future of this team and being tight against the cap and those mid-round picks being meaningful. I think the issue is that the problem is that a lot of people see the draft as the goal of the draft is to accumulate talent, and that's not really what the draft is. It's about team building. And there's a difference between acquiring talent and team building. And these moves really help the Falcons put themselves in a favorable position to team build as opposed to being forced to the alternative, I guess. We'll talk about it later on this podcast, I promise. We'll get to it eventually. But I'll go into detail of exactly what I'm talking about. But Yeah, I just wanted to tease a little bit. So that's it, guys. We will be back on Monday to talk about something, possibly a fan talk with another past fan guest. We'll talk about this offseason and other stuff and talk about the draft and all that type of stuff. So that'll be an interesting show to stay tuned to. And then we'll be back next week to talk more Falcons news. And probably start our pivot towards the draft and sort of assuming that the final stamps of free agency are pretty much wrapped up. Maybe a couple of more guys that they might re-sign. I think given their current cap space, you could probably see them re-signing a guy like Ishmael to a $1.5, maybe $2 million deal, and then probably get a couple of more guys like in the Paulson, in the Pastore sort of mold for the veteran minimum. Like three or four of those guys, and then they're pretty much done. Then they're out of cap space. And I know everybody's sort of waiting for the Matt Ryan deal, but as I explained like 2 weeks ago, I don't think the Matt Ryan deal is impending. Or no, it wasn't 2 weeks ago. It was like last Friday or something like that, last Thursday, after the Kirk Cousins deal signed. So go check out that podcast. But I don't think that's looming on the horizon, at least in the very near future. Maybe 2-3 weeks from now, it's possible it could happen, but... yeah, I don't think if you're hoping that Matt Ryan's going to sign his deal and the Falcons are going to go out there and start buying free agents, I think you've been barking up the wrong tree. But who knows? We'll see what happens, man. Wouldn't be the first time I was wrong this offseason about something. So, in the meantime, guys, if you have any suggestions for future content of the show, or any criticisms, or to provide me feedback on over mentioning Patrick DeMarco or not mentioning Patrick DeMarco enough, you can do so by hitting me up on Twitter. I'm at FalcFans. If it's podcast related, just let me know in the tweet. If it is podcast related, it's just easier to just go ahead and send it to the show's Twitter handle at LockedOnFalcons. If you don't have Twitter, don't like Twitter, hate character limits, then by all means, you can check out that other social media platform by the name of Facebook. Locked On Falcons is the Facebook page. Give us a like while you're there. If you hate social media and you just want to send an old fashioned email like it's 1986. I know they didn't send emails in 1996. You can do so at lockedonfalcons@mail.com. Also, you can post a comment on lockedonfalcons.com or falcfans.com, where the show is hosted and posted daily. And again, check out lockedonsports.com as well if you want to find additional Locked On Podcast Network content on FanRag Sports. So go ahead, check that out, guys. And we'll be back on Monday to talk more Falcons.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.